Thank you, Max. So today I will talk about our attempts to develop the DMFT, dynamical mean field theory, formalism for bosons. DMFT is a well-known method for fermions. For bosons, it was never tried, and several people have tried to do this in various approaches, like Mr. Richard in the Fourlight, the group of Walter Hofstetter, Wu Tang from China, and there was also very related work in Paris by Francesco Zamponi and co-workers. Our paper can be found here, it's published in Israel Atlas, and perhaps many of you know there has been some commotion about the formalism, but I plan to stay in the truth.
We want it for the records. So.
I was saying that veritas is Latin for truth. So outline of my talk today, some introduction. I'm going to introduce the DMFT for fermions in a nutshell, because we want to essentially look at these ideas and copy them for bosons. Because this is a joint seminar, I will quickly mention where DMFT was used in cold gases so far, which is actually not so much. DMFT is widely used for strongly correlated systems, also for electronic structure calculations, where it has brought a lot of insights. Now then I will try to go to the main part of the talk, which is really developing the formalism itself. I will have to review quickly some physics of the weakly interacting Bose gas. Then I will introduce the action for bosonic dynamical mean field theory. I will quickly go over three ways to arrive at the action as well as at the self-consistency equations that you need, which is an effective medium approach, a kind of RG approach, the cavity method. This was really the way that was done by Zamponi and co-workers. And then the most elegant way is the kinetic energy functional approximation. Then I will show some results for the scalar Bose-Hubbert model, and finally some conclusions and outlook. So please interrupt me at any time. So what is mean field theory? Static mean field theory, it is the following. Suppose we have a lattice, and we single out a single site, and we want to describe the single site as it is effectively coupled to a bath. The bath is given by all the neighbors. That's what the mean field theory is, and that's done self-consistently. So suppose we have a classical Ising model, a ferromagnet, so J is positive, with this Hamiltonian. Suppose we are interested in the magnetization on every site. The magnetization is the thermal average of the spin. Then, you know, without doing any approximation, I can introduce this Weiss field. So I have an effective Hamiltonian that is only site-dependent with an effective site-dependent Hamiltonian small hf coupling to the spin S. And as long as this relation is satisfied, so HIF is the inverse tangent hyperbolic of the magnetization itself, then basically this is exact. Now the approximation comes in if you say that you approximate this effective Hamiltonian as, say, the magnetic field plus the contribution from the nearest neighbors of the spins to the site I. So I sum over the neighbors J times, J is capital J, is the spin exchange times the magnetization on the neighboring sites. So I have, when all J are equal, I can write this as follows, where Z is the coordination number. And so the approximation in mean field is that I have to solve the self-consistency equation. Magnetization equals tangent hyperbolic beta inverse temperature times the magnetic field plus Z beta Jm. Now in a dynamical mean field theory, you want to go beyond this by not having just static properties, but for a quantum problem you want to keep also some retardation effects, some frequency dependence inside the description, which will still be local, right? And that's usually done as follows. So consider the Hubbert model for fermions. So DMFT was introduced 20 to 15 years ago, and I'm going to follow Antoine Georges' lecture notes, essentially, that you can find here. So consider, for instance, the Hubbert model for fermions, then the full Green's function can always...
So who has introduced it?
So it started really with, in 1989, with a paper by Metzner and co-workers, where they looked at infinite coordination number. And this was later then developed by Antoine Georges and co-workers to really develop this kind of formalism. But I will show some reviews in the next slide where you can find this all. So consider this Hubbert model. So we have the hopping, we have an onside repulsion U and some epsilon naught, which is just an offset or chemical potential for the density. Now the full Green's function can be written as follows. So I just have the usual Matsubara frequency, chemical potential, offset, lattice dispersion, and self-energy. Now in DMFT we are interested in the local Green's function, but with time dependence, as I said. So I have the local Green's function on site II for some spin up or down as a function of time differences, tau minus tau prime, defined in the usual way. Now, to copy the ideas from static mean field theory, I will do the following. I will keep a single site, but with time dependent. So in other words, I will try to map the system onto an Anderson impurity model, where I have, so Anderson impurity model, where I have the atomic degrees of freedom, the bath degrees of freedom, and the coupling between the atom and the bath. So the atom are all the local terms in the Hamiltonian, so the U and the chemical potential terms. The bath are all the sites outside my reference site, and so it's essentially this kind of dispersion. And the coupling is then given by this term. And now if you do this exercise, you will see that the effective parameters V and epsilon, which you have to determine in principle self-consistently, will only enter through the following form, which is the so-called hybridization function delta, which is given by this formula. Now, a more explicit way to see that is just integrating out the bath degrees of freedom, and then you have an effective action for the single site in which you have this non-interacting Green's function G0, but which is time-dependent, given by the Matsubara frequencies minus this hybridization function here, plus the U term, the mu is in here, right? Now, in principle, you can... So what is still missing here is a self-consistency equation. You still need to couple your site self-consistently to the bath. How do you do this? Well, in principle, you can say I can solve my impurity problem, and then I can compute the full Green's function G, or I can compute the self-energy sigma by the Dyson equation. So this one is now really on the impurity and has no momentum or site dependence. Now the approximation in DMFT is, you know, think back of the Weiss field in static mean field theory, is that I neglect all non-local components of the self-energy. So I say my full self-energy is in effect only local. So I say sigma II is the full self-energy, and I say all other terms are zero. That is the crucial assumption in DMFT. So this can, like we have seen for the ferromagnet, for the classicalizing ferromagnet, this self-consistency requirement can be rewritten as follows. So I now sum over all the k vectors of my lattice. I have delta, which is the hybridization function here that I introduced before. There is the full g to the minus 1 minus epsilon k, and this is again the g. So this is the self-consistency that you have to solve, which just simply follows by summing the solution of, so you construct a full G on the basis of sigma impurity, you sum over K, and then you require that this is in balance with the G naught. You can rewrite this introducing the density of states. So how is DMFT done in practice? Well, you have to solve the self-consistency. So usually you start from some assumption, some knowledge that you think about a non-interacting Green's function, say a non-interacting problem. Then you have to solve the local impurity problem, you have to solve the Anderson impurity problem, and this is usually the computationally difficult part. If you do this successfully, you will obtain the local Green's function G. From the local Green's function G, you can of course construct the self-energy of the impurity, sigma impurity, from which you construct this full Green's function by summing over all k vectors. And then you do the Hilbert transform, so you say I can now obtain new G naught, so a new non-interacting Green's function, by doing this kind of Dyson equation. And then I have a new G naught, and I iterate again and again and again till convergence is reached. So that's the MFT.
Question. So in the initial slides, you wrote down the bath as being non-interacting.
Yes.
Right. Is there a way to consider a more general bath than that? I mean, that allowed you to write this effective action, basically, right? Integrate out the bath. The bath was somehow strongly correlated.
Well, I mean, you can see the bath as all the other sites that you kind of assume that you can solve exactly, which of course you cannot do. So it doesn't really have to be a non-interacting bath. But you assume that you know the bath. Now the bath only serves to determine the parameters, so delta, self-consistently. That's all it does.
Here you indicate that the approximation comes in because of this neglecting non-local components of self-energy. In the static mean field theory, the approximation came in terms of restricting assumption nearest neighbors. Is there any relationship between these?
No, it's the same in self.
It amounts to the same thing, you're saying.
If you do static mean field, you will do the same, but on top of that, you will also neglect the time dependence. It will be purely static.
Yeah. No, I understand that part. But so this this includes all of the static process.
No, this goes beyond the static.
Right. But it includes that process.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the bath here, however, is fermionic, right?
Yes. Now these ideas have to be extended towards bosons later on, but it's crucial that you understand these kind of approximations and how it ends into the self-consistency. So what is known about DMFT in, like, as a kind of quote-unquote exact method? We know that DMFT is exact in the following limits. First of all, it's exact in the non-interacting limit U equals zero, obviously, because there's no self-energy. It's also exact in the other, on the other side, where in the atomic limit, where all the sides decouple, because obviously when everything decouples, self-energy is also exactly local. You can also show that, what was crucial in what Metzner and company have shown is that if you take the coordination number z to infinity, then DMFT becomes exact if you do proper scaling of the Hoppings. You have to scale the Hopping in such a way that kinetic energy remains a term of order unity. So you have to scale the Hoppings like 1 over z. Now, in my personal view, DMFT is nothing but an interpolation technique between these two limits in which you have these self-consistency loops. Yes.
So what about perturbation theory? It must have been used to evaluate the quality of DMFT for small u or small t. So what kind of percentage deviations do you see based on perturbative calculations?
No, so it has these physics for low u and low t. It has it correctly, right? It's very small. You will not see the deviation in the perturbative limit.
Sorry, so if I do, let's say, first or second order perturbation theory, I'll see no difference from DMFT at all.
For small enough u and t, yes.
Sorry?
For small enough u and t, of course.
So there must be a small difference, and then you can quantify it, you can put it on a plot. You say there's no difference, that doesn't make sense.
No, but you're not interested in small u and t. You have a theory that is reproducing these limits exactly. So
I'm just curious. So for example, if I say u over t is a 10, okay, let's say.
Yeah, I don't know the answer for you.
Is DMFT accurate to 1%? You know, is it accurate to digits?
What do you call accurate? Know. Because, you know, at 1 over 10, perturbation theory is not correct.
That's true.
So you're comparing, you know, apple and oranges.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
I will show something about the accuracy of DMFT later.
Okay.
But in general, there is no exact solution to the Hubbard model. How do I know if it's good or bad? For bosons, it's different. I will be able to check.
Could you compare it to MPS methods then? Is that how you evaluate it?
You'll see. Okay. So, so there are excellent review articles about DMFT. So this is the one from the early 90s by Antoine Georges, Gaby Cotlier, Werner Krauss and Rosenberg, which has most of the early developments of this kind of single-site DMFT. And for electronic structure calculations, there is one from 2006 by Cotlier and co-workers, and extensions beyond the single site towards cluster DMFT, when you have not just a single site as an impurity, but a few sites, was written down in this review. And there will be soon a new review on how you really solve these kind of Anderson impurity models efficiently using Monte Carlo methods, but it's not published yet. To show one example of the power of DMFT, what you see here is the phonon spectrum of plutonium in its stable delta phase, and I took it from this non-technical paper by Cotlier and Dieter Vollhardt. So black is experiment, red is DMFT. The agreement is, well, not bad, especially if you realize that like LDA band structure calculation is very bad for plutonium. It has the phase volume wrong by 30%. It predicts non-existent phases, but DMFT is kind of very useful in stabilizing the F electrons and stabilizing them in the vicinity of a Mott transition, and that's where it comes in. What about cold gases? Well, DMFT was not used a lot in cold gases so far, probably because there was no real need to from the experimental side. Now, the best known example, I think, is the Mott insulated paper by Emmanuel Bloch, in which Achim Roche and co-workers from Cologne did the theory. So what you see, so the dots are experiments and the lines are DMFT calculations. And what you see is the so-called compressibility as a function of trapping energy. The trapping energy is essentially the trap energy. So Vt is the trapping potential, gamma is some aspect ratio between the Z and perpendicular frequency confinements, number of particles, and then just in the proper units. RSC is the cloud size, so you measure experimentally square root of the distance from the center from all atoms, and you normalize this. This is the cloud size, and the compressibility is defined as the derivative of the cloud size with respect to the trapping energy and made it in the proper units. Now, they predict that if this curve reaches a minimum and then goes like up again and reaches a maximum, that this would be indicative of a hot transition, and they have something here. And so here you see some density profiles, and you see here n equal 1 in this dark color, which would signal a Mott transition. Now, there will be a point if you lower and lower and lower the temperature in cold gases where you would see a deviation from single-side DMFT. So these are results, very recent results, by Sebastian Fuchs and also Emmanuel Gull and co-workers. For the 3D Hubbert model, U equal 8 at half filling, and this is physics on approach to TNEL. TNEL would in these units be around 0.3 something. I forgot the exact number. And so what you see here on the left, this is temperature in units of the hopping. This is entropy per site, so but it's unity filling. Red curve is single side DMFT. The black curve is a kind of cluster DMFT in which you extrapolate in the cluster size. Emmanuel Gu will give a talk on that later in this program. The purple curve are high temperature series expansions up to 10th order. And so you get reasonable agreement up to temperatures of 1.5, and then you get some deviations. This is the log 2. Yeah. And the blue curve is determinantal lattice quantum Monte Carlo, so at half filling there is no sign problem, but you have a method that scales with the cube of the number of particles and temperature. This was done by Zhenya Kozik and Zhenya Burovsky. This is in blue. So in principle, these methods are exact if you extrapolate in the system size as well, and we get good agreement. And so we were able to calculate the entropy, and so you see some deviations from single-side DMFT. Now, for the experts, I have to say the single-side DMFT was done with a paramagnetic bath. If you look at the entropy per volume as a function of the filling factor, so between 0 and 1, then you get good agreement between DMFT and the extrapolated cluster DMFT up to a filling of, say, 0.7, and then you get some deviations. But this is, of course, at a low temperature of around 0.5. At the moment, in cold gas experiments, you will not see a difference between single-side DMFT and
fermions.
Yes.
So why is DMFT more accurate than low fillings?
Well, because it's fermion liquid, and I think there is no reason why there would be any structure beyond zero momentum. I mean, at extremely low fillings, there's of course the other argument that the Fermi energy comes extremely down, and so effectively you're like at higher temperature, but that's only true for very, very, very low filling here. Yeah.
You mentioned that DMFT also captures physics of, say, large UOD correctly. Is that correct, or?
Infinite. Well, you know, if the sites effectively decouple, then...
Right, deviate away from infinite a bit. I mean, exactly infinite is somewhat pathological, because you can have infinite degeneracy.
I didn't say infinite U, I said T equals zero.
But there are only two things in the... there's only T and U, then there's only one ratio U or T. So
yeah.
There's also chemical
potential. There's chemical potential. Okay, no, it's T equals zero, it becomes like that.
But my question is that if you're in a Mott insulator, so can you capture physics of a Mott insulator correctly within DMFT?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So DMFT does get metal to insulate for fermions transition. It does get it, it describes it, and that's one of the big successes.
Not the phase transition, but suppose the low-energy physics of a Mott insulator. We know that if you have a spin half, square lattice, we know that at zero temperature, something interesting should happen.
No, but you asked me about the red line and the log 2 in the end. And, yeah.
No, I'm saying, there can be many, many different...
No, you want to go to the limits where you go from the insulating, Mott insulating to the Heisenberg. Now, for the Heisenberg, I need something else. I can't do it with a single side. I need something that captures magnons, and that is not done properly in single side DMFT.
So you can't capture the valence Mott solid or anything like that?
Well, with single side, I have only a single side. I need something to break the units. I do it through the bat, which is always tricky because
If you do a cluster, you can.
And when I do a cluster, I can do more. I can do much better, yeah.
So can I figure out why this low filling is so good in a sense? It falls in a sense, because in the very dilute limit, you basically it's like a single party problem. You solve the single side exactly.
So for low...
For the extremely low density, right, it's like a low filling.
Yeah, it's just a liquid of particles that are...
Yeah. A lot of particles far away.
Yeah, and it only cares about charge decrease of freedom because it's so low and it's completely washed.
So you solve the single particle exactly in a local environment.
Probably, yeah. But this is Fermi liquid regime, right?
I'm not saying exactly, just well, you have to look at the differences between ideal gas and reacting gas. If you look on the gross scale, everything is free fermion. You have to plot the differences then.
I do have some renormalized mass, but it's Fermi liquid. Okay, so now let's move on to bosons. So we want to develop the dynamical mean field solution for the 3D Bose-Hubbert model. This is the Hamiltonian of the 3D Bose-Hubbert model. So we'll do as before. So we single out a reference site, and we want to have an effective action for this site. So we write down all the local terms. So we have the quantum mechanics, we have the chemical potential, and we have the U term. So in this action, we obviously have immediately the high temperature physics in the normal phase, and we also have the Mott phase. That will be done correctly. Now what is missing is kind of this term. We are missing the physics in the limit where this term dominates. Now, when this term dominates, that's exactly the limit of the weakly interacting Bose gas. No. So what we want to do is essentially include the diagrams of the weakly interacting Bose gas in such a way that everything becomes nicely and that you can interpolate between the two. So let me remind you about weakly interacting Bose gas. I'm going to follow this paper by Barbara Capogrosso et al., especially Boris and Nikolai. I write it as usual in the continuous space description. So we have a non-interacting term, which is just the kinetic energy. We have an interaction between particles, so U is some interaction as a function of position R1 and R2 between the two densities. Then there is an external field, so V is just some external field. It can be zero, it can be a trap. There is chemical potential. But now what we do explicitly, and that's kind of important for the rest of my talk, I explicitly break the symmetry. Okay, I introduce some symmetry-breaking field eta. Now, usually the weakly interacting Bose gas, if you do this, you will set at the end of the calculation eta to zero. Now, whenever you see a yellow box, it means something that is important for the BDMFT later on. Now, I can introduce some diagrammatic elements. So there is a propagator G0. It just propagates from R to R prime and from T to T prime. Then I can perturb in H1, so in the external potential, which I denote like this. Eta will be written like that. The condensate, which I will define next, so far it's not done, will be written with this curly line, and U will be a dotted line. Now what you have to do is you introduce the condensate. So you are going to write down all diagrams that have one incoming Green's function. That's what you want to do. You want to have all diagrams that are irreducible with respect to a single incoming bare Green's function. So I write this like that. So I have the eta field, I have the chemical potential, but then I have to go out with the condensate again, and then I say these are all the other diagrams. I can do the same for exactly the opposite, where the Green's function is an outgoing line. So this written in formula form is like this. So I have the Green's function, bare Green's function coming in and going out with eta, plus chemical potential scattering coming in G and going out with the condensate, and then all the rest. So in the presence of a condensate, this term can become non-zero and large, and so it corresponds to the anomalous average. So psi naught, I can define psi naught as the expectation value of this psi, which is non-zero, as I said, and that allows me to define the condensate density. Now in this approach, the Green's function is of course the resolvent of the Laplace operator. So if I write it like this, so I have the kinetic energy plus the chemical potential plus all these terms, theta, which correspond to eta. Now in the case of a homogeneous case, so this term would be zero, say V is also zero, then I have that mu is given exactly by theta divided by psi naught in the limit that eta goes to zero. Okay. Now if you go through the theory of the weakly interacting Bose gas, you're going to introduce the normal and the anomalous self-energy after you have introduced the condensate. They correspond to these diagrams. Now, if you evaluate them to lowest order, so to leading and subleading order, in fact, you will see that you can take them as essentially constants. So sigma can be given as 2 times total density times U, and sigma tilde can be given by the condensate density times U. Now here we see a first important thing, right? Because if you can take this as a constant, that's very good news for BDMFT, because we want self-energies that are not momentum dependent. Now, you can also write down the formulas for the propagator. So this is a bold line for the normal Green's function G, and this is the bold line for the anomalous propagator, denoted F. And if you do order of magnitude estimates, you will see that they are similar in magnitude, but they're opposite in sign. Okay, so that they are similar in magnitude means that in the presence of a broken symmetry, we will need to take both of them into account. And the minus sign is very bad news. Okay. I don't want to say much more about this.
Actually, sorry, yes. Pauline, I know this must be something important at least. You know, I know Matthias showed us, Quantum Monte Carlo already solved the Bose-Hopf model beautifully.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So first question is, what is the advantage with this? Is that because of dynamical pattern?
Later. That's not the point of, the point is developing the formalism. This will not replace Quantum Monte Carlo for the scalar of Bose-Hopf model, never. The point is what you can do beyond this.
Yeah, so the second question is, basically just for the bosons, am I right, you can just calculate all the Green's function loop by loop, like people in the high-end physics, they're doing that, like full loop all the calculation, like QCD standard model.
No.
But in the bosons, can you do the same?
You cannot perturb in U because the sign will be horrible.
I have no idea how you'll do it beyond the lowest order.
You have to listen to Nikolai's talk on Monday.
It's a symplectic series, you're
there.
You can do 2 orders.
Yeah, for the bosons, you can do the perturbative.
No, this guy is...
You're small, yes, but
this is subject to Dyson's collapse argument. It's in continuous space. That what Nikolai was talking about on Monday. There's no way you can expand systematically in U. What you do for bosons is a strong coupling expansion. You expand in the Hopping.
But of course, on that side, you can be full, like a Fermi diagonal series, right? You can just use that one. So the point I missed is, for example, in that formalism, you all have all the diagonals. You can just go ahead to put your computer to calculate. And here you can.
No, but here you don't want to compute the diagrams. You have some tools that you don't explicitly compute the diagrams. I draw them because that's what you effectively do, but you have some tools in the self consistently to compute them directly. But there is no way you can do a systematic expansion for you for bosons unless you do extra tricks. What I want to do here is the ideas behind the formalism and why the formalism is right. Okay. Now, one thing that always comes up in the discussion of the weakly interacting Bose gas has to do with the gapless mode. The Bilyaev technique from the previous page had, you know, this is now really technical, a serious problem, because you can show that for a gapless mode, Nepomniachtchi in the 70s and early 80s basically show that this has to go to zero for zero frequency and momentum going to zero, otherwise you will have a gap in the spectrum. It is a requirement for gapless mode. So the approach we took here is that we say that for short distances to intermediate distances, the Bilyaev technique will provide a very good answer. For long distances, where this would really have to go to zero for the gapless mode, you have to switch to Popov's hydrodynamic theory. Now for us, for BDMFT, this is not a problem. We have a single site, so we only want things at the short distance, and the condensate will be just what it is. Okay, now in the same context, one also has this famous Fugenholz-Pines theorem, which you can easily derive, which basically is saying that in the presence of a condensate, the chemical potential is given by the difference of the normal and the anomalous self energy at zero frequency and zero momentum. And that's a diagrammatic identity. It's in fact just a Wart identity. Okay, here I derive it, but I think I will skip this in the interest of time. Okay, so we have seen this light, so we now know what to do. So now let's really try to postulate the action. So first of all, I'm going to introduce a symmetry breaking field. And I'm going to do this immediately in the way that you would do it in static mean field. So this is my eta from in the previous weakly interacting Bose gas, but I immediately write it as in static mean field self-consistently as z times the Hopping times phi. Phi is my condensate. Okay, so this will really introduce my condensate, and it will introduce the condensate. So now, what I want for DMFT as well is to go beyond the condensate. I want a correction to the condensate because I want also second order terms. Right? So I'm going to do the Bogoliubov description. I'm going to decompose B into its expectation value and a small channel. So what I need to do next in a DMFT formalism is have something that will take care of terms of the Green's function, so but there will be normal and anomalous Green's function. So what I will do is introduce a kind of new term, this hybridization function, delta, but now it's in number notation, so it's a 2x2 matrix, coupling to the normal bosons. So delta B dagger has both delta B and delta B dagger, if you want. It's a two-component vector just as this one. Okay? So now, why does it have to be like this? Well, this is just textbook. You know, you take, for instance, Nageli-Orland, you look at chapter 4, and you will see that this is the one-loop correction done correctly on top of the condensate. Now, so what have we done? So this, of course, you immediately see this reproduces the physics of the weakly interacting Bose gas when these terms dominate. Now we also have that the infinite coordination number limit is done correctly. When you are in infinite coordination numbers, you cannot introduce delta B. We have only the expectation value of B itself, and we exactly reproduce static mean field. Okay? Now, static mean field, I have here an excerpt from Matthew Fish's paper, is exact, and I'm not going to explain. I assume everyone knows this. So what we still miss are the self-consistency equations. So there are now several ways to proceed. You can do an effective medium RG-like description, which I will do here. You can do this cavity method, and you can do kinetic energy functional approximation and coupling constant integration method. This is definitely the most elegant method. It's done in detail in the paper, in the supplementary material, and it's basically, again, literally following lecture notes by Antoine George, but changing for bosons and for the broken symmetry. Now, you can do more things. You can also do the so-called Baim-Cardanov approximation, and there are other ways.
So
So for the bosons, the key is to take care of the condensate bucket.
Well, the key is to,
For this whole modification.
So the problem you have to do is build in this condensate. You have a gapless mode, and on top of that, you do essentially a one-loop correction. And you have to do this in the correct way, and then you have to determine everything self-consistently, and that is the exercise.
So it's not so trivial to automatically borrow the fermion.
Well, once you know, it's easy. So let's quickly have a look at the real space for our G reasoning to find the action. Suppose I have the following. I have my internal degrees of freedom, which is my impurity side, and I have my external degrees of freedom, which is the bath. And then there is a coupling between them, internal and external. So I have my partition function written as follows with the action S. And so S has these three parts. So internal has only the local terms that we have seen before. External has everything for the external part, and the coupling is between, essentially for a Bose-Hubbard model, between nearest neighbors, internal, external, and just this hopping term. Okay? So what I'm going to do is, I want to arrive at an description where I basically have a direct product between the internal and the external, but in which I incorporated terms through delta S from the external into the internal. And that will be the approximation. So external is large, and I assume that it can break the spontaneous, that it can break the symmetry spontaneously. So I can decompose my external operators B into condensate and small terms. Through the hopping, internal will also acquire a condensate in the end when I require self consistently. So why not make life easy and immediately do it? Okay. So what I'm going to do is basically expand delta S from the exponent into a perturbative expansion, and then do a re-exponentiation of terms that I want to keep. So first I rewrite the delta S terms in terms of phi's and delta B's, and I end up with these three terms. Now, phi terms will be essentially large, and so I keep them in the exponent right away. So internal and external, I give it here a subscript, but in the end they will become equal. Okay, that's at the end of the self-consistently they have to become equal. So I keep phi immediately in the exponent. I will not expand those terms. Right? I can do that, but that's making life again more difficult, because then I will have to first reintroduce the condensate, bring it in the exponent, identify all these diagrams, cancel them, and see what's left. But it's much easier if you just keep it in here, and then you only expand essentially into the delta B terms. Okay? So when I do that, I end up only with delta B dagger internal goes to external, because we only have a nearest neighbor term, right, in delta S, and back. Okay, so that's now done on the next slide. I have my exponent, and now I start, I have here this extra term zeta. So this is internal, this is the external part essentially. Oh, external is here, so I have S internal, I have this part coming from the condensate, and then I have all the other terms. I'm going to expand the exponent to first and second order. Now let's look at what happens to first order. I have internal, external, but I have to take the average with respect to the external part. So the average sign comes from here to here, and the average of delta B is zero because it's small. So the first order term is zero. Let's look at the second order term. Now, in fact, there are four terms. Because I have defined a condensate, I need again to take care of anomalous and normal propagators. So I have four terms. I have terms delta B, internal, dagger, external, and all the other possible combinations. Again, the average is only with respect to external, so internal doesn't care. And so I have operators that will remain in the internal part, while external part will become functions that kind of renormalize the coefficients of the operators here. All of them are finite. There's no reason to say that they are zero, because I have two of them. So now I do the re-exponentiation. And for instance, for the term in which I had delta B, I have now some function, which I don't want to specify, k. So this corresponds to the anomalous Green's function, weakly interacting Bose gas. And I have three more. In principle, I could go on, go to third, fourth, and so on. But in principle, I'm done. I can just now postulate what the action should be. So I should just have, my symmetry breaking field coupled self-consistently with the mean field, so that's the right term. And then I have all these terms, again in Nambu notation. And now I switched notation, so this is the normal and this is the anomalous Green's function. These are the ones that I need to keep. So what happens now with the cells consistently? Well, now I require that the condensate is the same on every site. So I say phi equals phi external equals phi internal equals expectation value of B computed on the impurity side. And then I do the same as what we have seen. No, so because essentially what I have now for these guys is the same as for fermionic DMFT. There's nothing special. They are small terms. So all I need to do is to treat them similarly as we have seen for DMFT. And so I require that the Green's function on the impurity side coincides with the local Green's function on the medium. And that's again done by summing over all the k vectors in this way. And then you can do the usual self-consistency loop. Okay. So the final step is, because we don't like delta B operators, we like to work with full B operators, is to rewrite everything in terms of full B operators, and that's done here. But then you have to basically see that you have terms here that are of the term phi g b. Now, and this is of the same form as what you have here. So what you can do is absorb these terms and redefine this zt into kappa, where kappa is now zt minus essentially the zero frequency component of kappa. And I have to say that Peter Anders, you know, who did all the hard work here, he first basically came up with this formula, but he had like an idea of guessing and correcting the kinetic energy, which is not the way how I presented it here. Okay, and of course I can rewrite this out into components, and so I have essentially four terms, and then I have the usual, you know, the quantum mechanics, the chemical potential, on-site repulsion, and I have this coupling, kappa. Yes?
And that's kind of a slightly awful question, but I mean, suppose you're doing fermionic DMFT and you wanted to talk about superconductivity. You'd have anomalous averages there too, but presumably you don't have to go through this entire...
Well, it's different. Right? It's different. You know, if you do... You know, the whole point here is that you have the condensation in the one-body channel. And in the two-body channel, which is part of my description, I need a one-loop correction on top of the broken symmetry. When you do this kind of pairing in fermions, or you have even anti-ferromagnetism, it's always in the two-body channel. So you have nothing beyond the mean field. You can introduce the mean field, but you don't have the one-loop correction beyond this that you need to do here, right? There was something with which is called EDMFT, which had something similar as this. Now, another approach is a 1 over Z expansion. You can do the following. Consider a beta lattice or Cayley tree, which has this kind of structure. Now, Semerjian, and this is the group of Zamponi, they have shown in this paper, they have shown the following. They have shown that there is an exact solution for the Bose-Hubbard model on such a structure. And if you write it in terms of a coherence pattern representation, then the exact solution reduces to mean field to Fisher's et al. Mean field theory for infinite coordination number, and to first order you reproduce BDMFT. If you write it as an... But the problem is that this is not useful for solving exactly, because you would have to solve the Anderson impurity model in the same way as we have to do it. If, however, you use a number occupation representation, then the exact solution can be written as a simple self-consistency equation which you can solve easily. And that's what they did. I'm not going to go into detail on this, but the idea of deriving this is that you have to use the recursive structure of the tree, tree, right? So this is the idea behind the cavity or even quantum cavity method. So what you say is that I can look at the partial partition function on this side by the subtree rooted here, excluding this branch. And you can do this for every vertex. And then you require that all vertices and all edges are the same. And then you can basically define your cavity field as a product over z minus 1, other cavity fields times essentially the transfer between the different edges. And that's what you write down. And that's again a self-consistency equation in the end. Right? So I want to be very brief on this. So what you can do then is similar as before. You write again the generating function of correlated functions as follows. So it's again b dagger phi, phi will be condensate, which you can safely expand. You keep it again as the condensate, and this is again the connected Green's function, again in Ambu notation. And then you can rewrite it. But the point here is that you want to do a 1 over z expansion. So you want to keep first terms of order unity, and next you want to keep terms of 1 over z. And 1 over z will correspond to our one loop correction from before, and it should coincide. Now, you have to be a little bit careful, and this was missing in their paper, but now they definitely agree with them. I agreed. I talked to them, and they immediately wrote me notes and agreed. If you want to compare what they did to what we did, you need to basically correct for this missing leg. Right? We had the subtree with Z minus 1 neighbors at site I, but we excluded the branch I. If you want to know the true condensate at the site I, you need to correct for this missing branch. And so how do you do this systematically? Well, you take the limit z going to infinity. You need to scale the Hoppings again as t is 1 over z. But you need to keep all expansion orders to 1 over z systematically. You can neglect 1 over z squared, but not 1 over z. Now for the Green's function, now if you look before, the Green's function had a term t squared z minus 1. That is effectively of order 1 over z. But the condensate, however, had a term tz minus 1, which is of order unity. And so for the condensate, for the cavity field, you need to compensate. Okay. When you do that, and you correct properly, you will end up with a formula that is essentially the same as our kappa as before. So you get zt from before, and this is the integral at zero frequency of the hybridization in the end. Okay. So it is the same. And I will show results where we have agreement. Okay, so the most elegant way, but I'm going to skip it, is the kinetic energy functional approximation. This gives you an idea. I mean, you can look it up in our paper. It follows Antoine Georges' lecture. The idea is to do an expansion around the atomic limit using the coupling constant integration method. And when you do that, you arrive not only at the action, you also have the proper self-consistency equations, and you see what terms you throw away. And that's a very systematic way. And the nice feature about this, you know, definitely compared to a 1 over z expansion, is that it will be independent of any u, and it will be independent of any lattice structure and any lattice dimension. So the approximation could be good in any dimension. That's what it tells you. Okay, so now we are basically done with the formalism. So let's look at the self-consistency loop. So what you need to do, yes?
You sort of teased us by saying you know exactly what terms you throw away, but you didn't say what the terms are. Are you going to show us, or was that in that slide that slid by so quickly?
So this is essentially the expectation value of the kinetic energy, and you're going again to write it as phi I phi j plus delta B delta B. Now for delta B delta B, you're going to replace it by your knowledge about the Green's function. And then you throw away terms that are I mean, it's always the same. In the end, you will have to find a formula for this guy, and you're going to replace this guy by something local by implying that self-energy is local. Right? So you're going not to use this one. For this one, you need an approximation.
Yeah, I guess when you said that, I was expecting to.
So GC is this one. But you're going again to say, I don't want to keep sigma alpha, where alpha is between 0 and 1, between atomic limit and the final term with Hopping T. Yeah. You say, I don't want to keep this one. I'm going to replace this one by sigma alpha 0. And then you need to find the answer for what this is. And this one will essentially be 0 at stationarity. And then you have the usual DMFT self-consistency relation. So what is the approximation? The approximation is that you go from here to here. You say that for every self-energy away from the atomic limit, you replace it by the self-energy at the atomic limit. And that's the kind of terms that you throw away. We could write down what terms they are, but you know, next I'm going to show results. We're going to compare results for the BDMFT with quantum Monte Carlo worm simulations, and you will see what we have, right? Okay. So this is the usual DMFT self-consistency loop. So you start from a non-interacting G naught, you solve the impurity problem, you obtain the impurity Green's function, then you compute the self-energy. You know, there's some kind of Fourier transform involved. With the local self-energy, you know, then you do the DMFT approximation, and then you reconstruct the local Green's function by summing over all the k vectors. And then you can find your new bat again by the Dyson equation, and you start all over again. So what's the difference with the usual fermionic DMFT? Well, you need to introduce this self-consistency for bosons. You need to take into account this kappa. So you need to evaluate the zero frequency of the normal and anomalous Green's function. And what is still lacking is you need to solve impurity model, which you could do by diagrammatic Monte Carlo. Now that's done here. I will also skip it. You know, you can just say, I will map it to an Anderson model, take a number of bands and just diagonalize, which will give you very good answers for a single site. Or you can try to develop a quantum Monte Carlo algorithm. When you do that, you have to perturb in the normal and anomalous Green's functions, these guys, and into the condensate. And the representation uses, of course, a number occupation representation. So you have a kind of structure like this. So you start with an occupation number 2, then, for instance, you couple with the condensate, so the particle hops to the condensate, you have 1. Now you have a normal Green's function, so you go here from here to here. So it goes 1 down, and then 1 up again. In the meantime, for instance, another condensate. And then you also have these anomalous Green's functions. For instance, you go here from 2 to 3, and here again from 2 to 3. So it increases 2 times with plus 1. And then, of course, you need also, you can have some K star. But the problem is that if you do a QMC, these guys introduce a minus sign for the properties of the weakly interacting Bose guys that I mentioned. And now you need to sample over all possible configurations, so all possible orderings, all possible expansion orders, and all possible basis states, the usual way. So let's look at some results. So this is the perturbation order of, so the total expansion order of the normal Green's function of the condensate, and of the anomalous Green's function. Of course, you can always take the normal and the anomalous Green's functions are real functions, and also the condensate can be taken real by choice by U1 symmetry. So when we look at density equal 1 and temperature 0.5, then you get here something, and then you hit the transition point where it turns superfluid, and then the condensate goes up. This is how the normal Green's function behaves, and the green line is how the anomalous Green's function behaves, which is of course also 0 in the normal, in the mod phase, and in the broken phase goes up. And this one introduces sign. And it's continuous. Now let's look at the sign. Well, it's actually not so good. I call it a sign torture. Here again, we are in the normal phase. Here you go into the broken phase, temperature 0.25. But at temperature 0.1, the sign becomes pretty bad. And that's not so surprising, because we know that, you know, if you're in the regime of the weakly interacting Bose gas, normal and anomalous are equal in magnitude but opposite in sign. If you perturb in them, good luck. Sign will be bad. And it's a bad idea to set the anomalous Green's functions to 0 and not compute, and you will have bad results. Now, on the Hugenholtz-Pines theorem, there is a real subtlety. So, you know, I said before, if you have a condensate, Hugenholtz-Pines should be satisfied, and that's a consequence of the Goldstone mode. If you do, so this is our impurity action, I just repeat it. If you take only phi self-consistently, and you do not determine the hybridization self-consistently, suppose you do that. So it's like mean field, but not entirely static, because phi can have, but will not have, some time dependence. But you still keep these terms in the action, but you don't determine them self-consistently, right? So it's like one loop, but not self-consistent. If you do this, then Hugenholtz-Pines is fulfilled up to a shift of not 6, but z times t, z times t coming from here. And that you can easily show that should be the case. If, however, you say I want to determine delta self-consistently, right? So you do the DMFT loop, and every time you compute a Green's function, you plug it in again here again, then what you see is that this delta, it becomes a functional of phi and previous Green's function, and the previous steps, and it couples them all back again and again and again. And when you do this, you will break Hugenholtz-Pines. You will introduce a gap in the spectrum. Is it large? Well, let's have a look. This is the superfluid phase. So in the normal or mod phase, it doesn't matter, right? There is no such theorem that it should be fine. But in the superfluid phase, there is something. It goes from 0 to 0.18. Does it mean anything? Not much. Because it's like on the order of 1% of the magnitude of the self-energy. So you break it at the 1% level. Now you could say two things. You could say like we do, well, I don't really care, we break it at 1% and the next generation will do better. Or you could try to say, okay, well, let's introduce a flow in chemical potential such that I respect it. That was not done yet. It's the problem is if mu starts flowing, it's hard to compare with other simulations because you don't have bare parameters anymore. Now, I also want to say, you know, losing the equation of state is not uncommon if you do a self-consistent strong coupling expansion. Not uncommon at all. It's usual. Let's look at correlation functions between BDMFT and our real quantum Monte Carlo worm algorithm simulations in three phases, normal, MOT, and superfluid. So it's density, and basically there's perfect agreement. There's also a table here in which we compare the densities, and we also compare the condensate density, and you basically get agreement which is very good, up to the level of 2 to 5%. This is for temperature equal 1. Let's compare with the exact solution on a beta structure, on a Cayley tree. So you get here the different MOT lobes, and these are superfluid phases between the MOT lobes. So this is the condensate density. Then again, you see very good agreement. So we have basically a right answer. Okay. Let's look at phase diagrams finally. So this is a 3D phase diagram, Bose-Hubbard model. Let's start with the ground state. There are four approximations here. There is the mean field, static mean field. There is the BDMFT, which is what I just explained. There is quantum Monte Carlo, which is, well, not exactly an approximation in blue. And then there is the approximation in which you don't take the density of states for a 3D cubic lattice, but you take the density of states for a Cayley tree, beta z equals 6, which is easier in the formalism, and that's the red line. And so basically you get an extremely good agreement between the Monte Carlo and the BDMFT at the ground state. Is it surprising? Well, here I don't find it surprising, but here I find it very surprising. It gets even, you know, in some way these are mean field transitions, and even this one is a 4DXY model, so maybe you're okay. So let's look at finite temperature unity density. Now, for what you would expect here is essentially a 3DXY model transition. Now, and again, you get perfect agreement, and it's really puzzling. Right? It's much better than static mean field, but it's extremely good, 1 to 2%. Okay, let's go to 2D.
Can you comment on the take the mean field, I have this artificial feature of this thing turning around.
Yeah, it happens a little bit here too, in fact. But so you know,
it's not clear that it would go away.
What?
It's not clear that it would definitely go away.
Yeah, but this is so small. I mean, what do you want? We do such a big approximation, and you get something like this. I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lola, let me now ask the question.
Who are they?
Okay. So now we can compare apples and apples.
Yeah,
so,
we do.
But can you do this for varying temperatures and then see how your effort in the DMT is growing?
What do you mean? These are different temperatures.
Yeah, but how's your effort scaling?
Oh, the effort is not going well. So here it's very fast, but here there are big troubles. You know, you need typically, if you do not pay attention, you need like 200 cycles before it converges. So the problem is that in the solver, the way you can like measure certain lines is only by looking at when you have a condensate line. So you always have to start from a case where you have a large condensate. If you want to go to a phase where the condensate is zero, you need to iterate, and the condensate will go down. So if you're close to here, you can like imagine that you need to iterate a long time before the system really knows if it has to be zero or very small. And so that's where it has some trouble. Now, you can do tricks, right? You can speed up the convergence, and we do manage to do that. But in general, it's pretty fast. It's, you know, like deep in a phase, it's a matter of seconds, but then here again, sooner or later, you will hit a sign problem at the moment. But here it's then yeah, you know, few seconds and you have the answer. But at the moment I only care about being accurate and not as much about being efficient, because I don't think in the end you should use a mean field approximation where you have better methods. I don't think so.
Well, but you could now use this for kids of frustrated
bosons. Yeah, exactly. But that's where it may be useful. Once you understand this formalism, you can maybe try to extend it.
But then you want to know qualitatively when you're correct. So how much effort do you have to put in?
But if you don't know the right answer, how do you know
you're right? No, here you know the answer.
Here we know the answer.
You should graph the answers here.
Yeah, but you can only cross your fingers for other methods and hope that it's still okay, right?
So, maybe you show that, but how about the superfluid densities, the superfluid fractions? Can you compute that and compare to?
Yeah, I think we can compute the superfluid density, but we didn't do it. The problem is you have to use the Landau formula for the superfluid density, and so it will be on top of a condensate. I didn't do it yet, but I think it can be done.
Yeah, and here by superfluid you just mean condensate, right? Because at U equals zero there wouldn't be a superfluid.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the phase. I didn't draw. Yeah.
It's just that.
I mean, but in our approximation, you know, there is always a condenser, you know, that's... It's, now, 2D. Ground state phase diagram, same agreement. I don't know why. But at finite temperature, we're a little bit off, you know, and that's, you know, these are KT transitions. It would be too much, right, if this were good. So one thing, but I don't have a slide, is what about the exponents? What about the critical exponents? They're not mean field. We don't see mean field exponents. I said the transition is continuous, that's right. They're not mean field, and they're of course not, in this case, 3dxy. Why not? Well, my argument is the following. We have a mean field, but on top of that, we do a one-loop correction self-consistently. So what you would expect, in my opinion, is non-universal exponents. And that's essentially what we see. If you go along this line, or you vary temperature from normal to superfluid, you vary the exponent. And that's what you get. OK, this is my final slide. So what have we done? We developed a mean field theory, degradation effects that builds in the broken symmetry and the one-loop correction correctly. So it's an interpolation technique between the non-interacting limit and the atomic limit, and it reproduces both correctly. It reduces to mean field theory for infinite coordination number, and it has agreement with the Bose-Hubbert model phase diagram that is extremely good. So, but I would still say that BDMFT is a formalism under development. You know, there are some issues. But it may be a good starting point for further studies in otherwise harder intractable systems, and I listed a few, like maybe we can think of other impurity solvers, maybe we can try to improve on that and get something better for the sign. So something very interesting would be to combine it with fermionic DMFT. Then you can do both fermi mixtures for cold gases, but you can also look at superconductors and coupling with phonons and electrons. Maybe Bose-Boson mixture, spinor bosons, where you can again compare with an exact solution. Of course, cluster extensions you can try, and then you will, well, then you can play games and ask yourself, how does my critical exponent change if I increase the cluster size? There are, of course, just bosonic impurity models in which you don't have to couple self-consistently to the bath. And maybe something very interesting would be to try to do real-time dynamics on the basis of this formalism, so that would be go beyond Kutzwiller, because you have the one loop. And that would definitely be something very interesting to try, but no one has tried it yet. All right. Thank you.
And, I started already to ask the question, so I will take the liberty to finish it. So what about the inhomogeneous things like this disordered system? This also probably is possible, but
I don't like it. I don't know how to do it without with a single
you know, for example, most of the in the classical case, the dynamical mean field theory was introduced with Jackie Kotler and thing for spin glasses, for neural networks and things like that. And of course, avoiding all the problems with non-ergodicity and blah, blah, blah. And cavity method also is Mezar, Parisi method for spin glasses. This is where it all comes from.
This is exactly
somehow,
what
I would expect that this is exactly for this.
I didn't think about it. That's the honest answer. I can easily imagine doing this with disorder in the hopping. That would be straightforward to do. And then,
yeah. If you introduce replicas, then formally the problem will look like if it had no disorder, right? I'm not sure it's a good idea to combine this stuff with replicas. I guess it was invented as alternative to replicas.
But we have the answer for both of them.
Exactly, that was the idea. So what are the problems of partitioning? That was the whole motivation. Okay, questions and comments, Lincoln.
Yeah, Walter Hochstetter spent a long time on BDMFT, and you started out with this Veritas. So can you explain what he was missing?
Yes, so what Walter, I mean, at least in my opinion, also like when talking to him, was doing was he tried to, what he did was very close to this 1 over z expansion, but and he realized the problem of the missing link, of the missing leg, sorry, not link, missing leg between the edges, so right? Okay. So the problem with this original formulation was that they didn't compensate for that. And he kind of realized the problem, but then the paper gets very unclear. And the way they tried to compensate was this was something that I cannot justify. They did a perturbative expansion for the condensate to compensate for that. But the condensate, at least in my view, is an infinite sum of diagrams. You cannot get it in lowest order perturbation theory. Now, when he saw this answer, he realized, or his co-workers realized, how to change it and get an exact formulation. And there is a new paper from end of July in which he, I think, has the right way to do it with 1 over z expansion.
Yeah. So is it correct that in your approach it's a difference between the z and z minus 1, is that correct?
I mean, there is a difference between... No,
t times z minus 1 and t times z, correct?
No. So for the...
In the terms that you like.
No, t times z and t times z minus 1 is the same. The problem is that it's of order unity, and you have to collect all the terms up to order 1 over...
Yes, 1 over z.
And that means you need to...
No, but t times z minus 1
is 1 over
z.
Yeah,
exactly.
I agree.
Okay. More questions? Can comment, Anna?
When you compare this mean field theory at finite temperature, this is like this is stochastic Hooke's filter that allows to go to finite temperature, or what it is this?
Well, if you do this at high temperature, you will not introduce the condensate, then you will, I think, just have something that can hold you, that can hop around you. So normal particles will hop around, it will be like a strong coupling without a broken symmetry. Yeah, I think it's the case.
So I'm still there as a design problem. So you said at some point it gets bad with the temperature going low, but then at t equals 0 it's all golden. So how do I understand that you can get to t equals 0?
Because the condensate fraction goes to 0.
Condensate fraction will also drop to 0, and so the sign will get better. But that's a very narrow region usually. Yeah.
Oh, I see. So you're very good at criticality, and as you go away at low temperatures.
Well, we have trouble on the superfluid side. Yeah.
Okay.
More?
More?
Here.
Yeah.
Go on, Vincent.
So actually, just a line of question. I think the key, my understanding is that I'm not working on this method. You have to develop the method because the condensate, they have taken the gapless node, etc. So can you do, like say, for the dipolar gas, if you want to calculate these super solids, does that mean you have to develop a new formalism to include the crystal vibration modes?
DMFT is
not... A new story, you just cannot take this one and apply it to these.
In general, DMFT is not good when interactions are long range.
Okay. In general. Even if it's modified...
No, you can modify the formula.
It doesn't have to be dipolar. Let's just say, for any possible case other than the uniform condensate.
Oh, no, this is not a problem. You can do something else than a uniform condensate, that's not a problem. The problem would be the long-range interaction.
The line uniform condensate, you can still calculate, say, the dynamic instability of some uniform condensate compared with what you have now. Basically, you can do the mass state uniform condensate.
No, this is not a problem. You can allow for different condensates, and if you go to this through this kinetic energy functional, you will see where we assume that the condensate is homogeneous. But you can just
change. For line uniform, you have new modes.
No, that would not be a problem.
Not a problem.
But at some point, you will have to, you know, if you want a good description, you have to go beyond single side, otherwise you will just be too crude. Yeah?
You've introduced this the idea of a condensate here. How does that work in 2D where there isn't true long-range order?
Yeah, so this is again the whole issue of breaking the symmetry explicitly. When I break the symmetry explicitly as I do it here, I always introduce a condensate, and I do fluctuations on top of the condensate, and so I'm always fine. Same in 1D.
Okay, so the fluctuations take care of that.
No, no, I do. I introduce. No, no, I break the symmetry explicitly.
Right, and then you've got. And when you do that, you've got real long range order.
Yeah.
And then you let it go to zero, no? Didn't you?
But then the compensator goes to zero.
Compensator
fluctuation remains. So in the sense, you reproduce what you.
So want. You reproduce the. And does it reproduce, for example, in 2D algebraic? No.
In 2D is conceptually wrong, right? In the superfluid phase, he has a condensate.
But again, it's the same as the picture that, you know,
right,
close to the transition.
It works pretty well. So that's what I'm wondering. Well, okay, but the ground state works. But of course, the ground state would work.
This is different physics. Yeah. This is different physics. But here, it obviously doesn't work.
So there, you're saying the fact that it doesn't work is a reflection of this.
Okay, so my question, perhaps more to the electronic one, is can DMFT actually produce non-Fermi liquid phases?
Oh, yes.
Can.
Oh yeah, it can. Yeah. But you have, and there's huge literature on it. But that's a big, you know, Fermi liquid to non-Fermi liquid. There are many papers on that. My Margerell has something not so long ago.
Sarang.
So what can you do with DMFT for bosons you can't sort of do using, you know, Monte Carlo techniques?
Who knows at the moment? Nothing, right? I mean, it's all open. No, but you know, the real-time dynamics and then maybe Bose-Fermi mixtures is really exciting, right?
No, but I understand that the space diagram that you have shown calculated with BDNFTM are cheaper to calculate than with the quantum Monte Carlo.
I think it's disputable.
What?
I mean, I don't like it. If you have an exact method, just use the exact method and don't try
this to... This I understand, and I understand that the main aim of your talk and of your work is to show that BDMFT is not good.
No, it's
and that's
good.
Why this why it puzzles him, because he wanted to show it now.
No, 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 that's not... No, the phase transition itself, where it happens is local physics. We have that. That it's not unexpected that we are within 10%. But that we are so close, maybe, that is strange.
No, but still, it is easier to use, in a sense of effort, it's still cheaper.
Well, it's definitely cheaper, yes.
For the same quality, it's not.
But for the same quality, well,
because you can run on your square, the exact method that will give you a similar quality.
Absolutely. One more question, and we go for coffee or whatever. There's no question, then let's thank Glover.